KALW.
I can say for a fact that, like, the product itself is addictive. And then, like, the want is increased by the people around you who also want it more.
Today, why vaping is exploding in popularity among teens.
The head rush is basically what I imagine is what everyone is chasing when they use a Juul product or, like, any other nicotine-based products.
A look at the vaping craze. Then how video games are leaving one high schooler feeling disconnected from his friends.
I'll say I'm partially addicted, but not really, because I could stop playing if I wanted to. I just play a lot right now.
And why media representation matters to young people.
It has been so hard to get away from that stereotype created by non-Asians in the first place.
Stories from San Francisco public school students. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. A couple of weeks ago, San Francisco Unified School District sent out letters of assignment to families, letting them know which schools their children have been assigned to for the 2024-2025 school year. This year, 90% of applicants got one of their choices, but the window is still open for families to submit, revise, and cancel an application. That deadline is April 19th. So today we're bringing you stories that were all reported by students from the San Francisco High School Galileo Academy of Science and Technology. In 2018, they took part in a summer internship program with us here at KALW, and they learned all about audio journalism. And they have some interesting insight into the stories we'll share with you today, starting with this one. Juul is kind of like the iPhone of e-cigarettes. It's a vaping device that looks like a computer gadget and delivers hits of flavored nicotine vapor. While it may be marketed as a safer alternative to cigarettes for adults, Juul has been infiltrating high schools around the country. Andy Shea has more.
My friend, Daniel Gambold, is vaping inside my car. He puts an e-cigarette that looks like a metallic USB called Juul up to his mouth and inhales.
It's like when you sit down for a long time and you get up, you get dizzy and you get disoriented, and like it feels like the world is moving like around you.
He performs tricks, shaping his mouth into an O and breathing out circles of smoke.
The head rush is basically what I imagine is what everyone is chasing when they use a Juul product or like any other nicotine-based products.
We both graduated from Galileo High School in San Francisco this summer. His friends pushed him to try Juul a few months ago, and now he vapes regularly with his friends during raves or whenever he gets the chance.
It's just another thing you can do, so I mean, why not, right? I mean, I would definitely prefer the Juul over cigarette. And, like, I would not actively use a cigarette ever. A cigarette is definitely bad. It just, like, looks bad when you use it.
The pods, or cartridges, inside a Juul are loaded with a concentrated juice cocktail of salt and organic acids found in tobacco leaves. My friend isn't sure about the specifics of what's inside a Juul, but he knows about the nicotine inside. Each Juul pod contains as much nicotine as an entire pack of cigarettes. My friend calls himself a Juul head and says he's hooked.
Yeah, I can say for a fact that, like, the product itself is addictive because, like, beforehand, when I never used it, I mean, I was never like, hey, I want another hit, I want another Juul. I want to do it, you know? Only ever since starting to use it, it kind of makes you want more. And then, like, the want is increased by the people around you who also want it more.
During my junior year at Galileo, I noticed the high school bathroom smelled better, like signature Juul flavors, mango, cool mint, and creme brulee. I saw people Juuling at parties. At first, I thought these vapes were just flavored, harmless water vapor. Juul only hit the market in 2015, but sales have skyrocketed since, jumping nearly 800% this past year. It was designed by two Stanford University product design graduates working on their thesis and looking for a way to help adults find better alternatives to cigarettes.
I switched to Juul because, one, it worked, and two, you know, the convenience of the product itself.
You can find lots of testimonials, like this one on Juul's YouTube channel. Here, Rahul, a director of a consulting firm in New York, swears Juul helped him quit cigarettes.
What do I miss about smoking cigarettes? Nothing. You know, I don't smell of cigarettes.
Jewel wouldn't speak to me for this story, but a spokesperson sent me a statement saying, quote, "We cannot be more emphatic on this point. No young person or non-nicotine user should ever try Jewel," end quote. This past spring, the Food and Drug Administration announced it was cracking down on underage vape sales. One day later, Jewel Labs pledged to spend $30 million over 3 years to combat vaping among teens. From an early age, teenagers like me are taught that cigarettes will yellow our teeth, make our bodies smell, and kill us. But Jewel is new, flavorful, sleek, and easy to hide from teachers and other adults. I meet Matthew Allen, a special ed teacher inside his classroom at Galileo High School.
Do you like look out for like common techniques, like especially when kids go under the table or like they're breathing into their like their sleeve?
Yeah, I've seen some window activity and, you know, blowing it up in the air quickly.
About a month ago, Allen spotted one of his students vaping during school hours. So he confiscated the e-cig device, telling the student that if he wanted it back, his parents could get in touch.
I think the ease with which a student could use one of these devices is alarming. There's no scent. It can be done very quickly. There's no setup. I don't really feel like I have the ability to go on a one-man crusade and snatch all these vapes. You know, I wouldn't want to snatch someone's property anyway.
He's a basketball coach and tries to be a good, healthy role model for his students.
When I was in middle school and high school, there were always these posters of longtime cigarette users, and there's pictures of their lungs and pictures of their brain and pictures of their skin, and the person was missing a throat. And that was because they had years of research to publish this information that was pretty indisputable.
But with Jewel?
It's a weird time when it's relatively new and schools and public health don't have the resources and the materials yet to explain how damaging it is.
Bonnie Halpern-Felscher is a pediatrics professor at Stanford University. She's been studying tobacco use and prevention among youth for decades.
And I'm interested in adolescent risk behavior overall, so my research has looked at tobacco, marijuana, sex drugs, risky driving, you name it.
When she noticed how popular vaping was becoming among teens in the last few years, she got to work to fill the information gap. Now she designs toolkits that teach teenagers and young adults the harmful effects of smoking. This toolkit is used by many school districts in California, including here in San Francisco.
When you talk to youth about the risks of any product, it's very important not to just tell them no when it's bad and it's harmful. It's more important to tell youth, look, you're being manipulated, look, you're being targeted. That's what worked with cigarettes.
And there are signs teens are hearing the message. According to a survey done by the San Francisco Unified School District, e-cigarette usage has gone down among San Francisco teenagers, dropping by roughly 7% from 2015 to 2017. But around the country, e-cigs are still the most commonly used tobacco product among middle and high school students. And it is difficult for anyone to predict what technologies will hook kids next.
I think it's a total black box right now. The public health community needs to figure out ways to get ahead of it. We're going to wind up in the same situation otherwise, where we have a new product come on the market that we're not ready for, and we're not ready to do prevention.
Back in my car, my friend Dandar Gamble hits Jewel over and over, probably about 10 times. While we're talking, he goes philosophical and psychological, back and forth about whether he considers himself addicted.
Being addicted isn't like a state of mind where you are aware of being addicted. It's a subconscious thing. So like, kids can know like, yeah, this is addictive. But even me, I can relate. I'm like, yeah, I'm not addicted, but I'm still using it like alone.
My friend doesn't have any plans to quit, but
I always have that voice in the back of my head saying Jewel is bad because it kind of hurts your reputation in front of certain people, like close friends who don't use Jewels.
He says it's not the Jewel ads that persuade him to vape. It's his friends and the people around him. If they stop vaping, he might too.
That's basically like how you can kind of stop someone. Like you have peer shunning, peers just who say, dude, don't do it. It's like not cool. Like, what are you doing? You know, those people are the only people who like kind of stop you.
Since the spring, people have filed at least 3 lawsuits against Jewel for what they say are deceptive marketing practices. Meanwhile, the Massachusetts Attorney General is investigating whether Jewel is doing enough to keep minors from buying vaping products online. For Cross Currents, I'm Andy Shea.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Today, we're showcasing reporting from San Francisco's public school students. Since at least the dawn of the television set, psychologists and parents have worried about kids spending too much time staring at screens. When it comes to video games, some mental health experts now say obsessive gamers suffer from something called video game disorder. When Zhao Chen quit gaming, he started to wonder, were he and his friends just having fun, or is zealous gameplay really an addiction?
Up until a few months ago, I loved video games, but I didn't just love gaming, I was obsessed. I remember racing home every day after school to play League of Legends. I gamed for hours and hours every day, up until at least midnight. In League of Legends, I had a mission. It was up to me to help my virtual team destroy the towers, guarding the enemy's base. My purpose every day was to climb the rank ladder, but every morning, I have to go down a few levels, back to the real world. I was so focused on showing off my skills to my team in League of Legends that I barely spent any time doing my homework. I was so tired after gaming all night. Every night, I fall asleep during class. My grades dropped lower and lower until I got a C in algebra.
So those would be the typical signs that there's a disorder or a dysfunction going on.
Thomas Plan, a psychology professor at Santa Clara University, says very few people game to the point of mental and physical self-destruction like I did, but...
For some people, a certain number of people, they can't stop engaging in the behavior even when it's destructive.
Psychologists are divided over whether gaming disorder is a real diagnosis. The World Health Organization, also known as WHO, says it is. This summer, the WHO announced that gaming disorder would be included in its disease classification menu.
Certainly anything that is obsessive, that interferes with social, occupational, school functioning, and so forth, in a destructive or dysfunctional way, most of us mental health professionals would consider a disorder.
That all sounds pretty bad, but then again, roughly two-thirds of American households play video games. How do you draw a line between an addiction and a hobby?
Well, you know, these things are all designed to be addictive because companies make money to not only sell their product, but keep people engaged in the product.
6 months ago, I forced myself to quit gaming. I started sleeping at night rather than during class. Like magic, my grades went back up again. I rarely play video games anymore. I tried playing League of Legends a few weeks ago, and I hated every second of it. I hope this game will end soon because I just spent like about 34 minutes. One more turn and we win. Oh, we didn't get it, bruh. 35 minutes. So I'm gonna get off right now. I don't like this game anymore. It's kind of boring. But my friends are still obsessive gamers. They are like the extreme version of me back in the day. Sometimes it's hard for us to get in touch and talk to each other because my friends are daydreaming about Fortnite. A few weeks ago, I went over my friend Alfredo Perez's house. He's playing Fortnite again with his friend Christian.
You're garbage, bro.
I'm wrong, bro. I'm hella wrong.
Finding secret battles, though.
You're hating. Well, I started playing video games when I was about 7 years old on a Game Boy, which was a gift from my grandma. That's where I spent most of my childhood playing on.
Even now, while I'm trying to talk to him for this story, he keeps playing.
I'll say I'm partially addicted, but not really because I could stop playing if I wanted to. I just play a lot right now. If I didn't play video games, I'd probably be outside or just be sleeping doing nothing.
Or he could hang out with me. Lately, he won't pick up the phone when I call him. When I text him, he doesn't reply. I think that's because he's playing video games. But even though I feel distant from him, he says games help him make friends online.
I like Fortnite because it's trending and you have to use teamwork to win. I think it helps build relationships with people because you can interact with them and just like having to work together to reach a goal.
I'm a junior in high school, not a psychologist. I don't know if my friends are addicted to video games. Christopher Ferguson, a psychologist at Stetson University, says blaming video games is often just a way to avoid talking about deeper issues.
It's funny, like we really, really enjoy consuming media. At the same time, we really, really enjoy blaming media for all the problems we have, you know?
He says the small percentage of gamers who overdo screen time often show signs of other mental health problems, like depression or anxiety.
The evidence we have suggests it's really not so much that games do this to people. We really need to focus more on the issue that these individuals have these underlying mental health conditions, not so much focusing on the idea that games are causing these problems.
Even if my friends really are just having fun playing Fortnite, I still wish they were easier to reach. Ferguson doesn't have a solution for me, but he has some advice.
It's just to open up a conversation about that, you know, to say like, you know, hey, we used to do a lot of other things. Yeah, I kind of miss that.
Or he says, find some new friends.
Friends who may be able to, you know, spend time with you offline if that's not being met with the current batch of friends.
But I am not sure if I am ready to talk to my friends about their gaming habits. It is difficult to reach them because they are always playing video games. For Cross Currents, I'm Zhao Chen.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is a special Cross Currents today showcasing the work of students in the San Francisco Unified School District. When the hit rom-com Crazy Rich Asians came out in 2018, it was the first major Hollywood film in 20 years to feature a mostly Asian cast. And for many viewers, the film was groundbreaking because it shows Asians on the big screen beyond stereotypes. And for Ashley Nguyen, Hollywood's portrayal of Asian American women is personal.
When I was a little girl, I always went to the movies. My favorite films were always ones with girls saving the day. I always thought to myself, how can I be like her? But I soon realized that I couldn't because I didn't look like her. And if I did see someone that looked like me on screen, she was unheroic or she played the victim. But such portrayal doesn't represent me or the independent woman in my life. Meet my family.
I do everything.
That's my grandma. I call her Papa, which is Cantonese for grandma. She's a manager of a wholesale greenhouse center.
Badass Bach.
That's my mom's nickname at work. She's a San Francisco deputy sheriff.
I'm more than just a small little girl.
And my older sister, a waitress and a future nurse anesthesiologist. Growing up, I've seen these women defy the stereotypes that the media has created for Asian and Asian American women. You know, showing us as quiet, passive, subservient, and docile. So I asked my sister what she thinks of these portrayals.
Like, if you actually know Cantonese women, they're like the most like craziest people, you know, like when you go to family gatherings, they're the ones like yelling, like making things happen. So I feel like media doesn't correctly portray that.
My sister is right. It's safe to say that my family is one of the loudest, most extra families out there. But that kind of family isn't on TV. In fact, I rarely see Asians on the big screen. We're usually hidden in the background or kept as a side character.
Yeah, I guess they're just not expected to do much, you know, not to be a leader.
We're constantly underestimated, and that was especially true for my mom growing up here in San Francisco.
They would call me names, all this stuff, and they'd be trying to bully me.
But her classmates didn't expect her to stand out for herself.
It seems like talking to them doesn't work. So, yeah, we had to get into a few fights.
She's still a badass, and she's my role model. But since she's 5'2", she's underestimated at the workplace all the time.
The inmate's always sizing you up. See if you get scared, nervous in any way. You just show that you're the one who's in charge.
My mom isn't the only one who's a boss. My grandma too. Literally, though.
They call me to work.
Okay. That's my papa speaking Cantonese to her employees. They want to know if they could work another shift.
I work in Hamun Bay, so I organize for everything.
In 1982, my grandma came from Vietnam to America. When she first arrived, she worked at a sewing shop. Soon after, she was able to own her own sewing shop and a laundromat while raising 5 kids. But rent became too high, so she sold both places and she's been working at Rocket Farms ever since.
Asian American women, I think they're 100% strong, or like put their life at stake to escape their country and to come to a new one, not knowing like what's on the other side, not knowing how they're even gonna live there.
That's my older sister again. She's another adventurous, free-spirited person in my life. And since the stereotypical Asian women on TV don't match up to the people I know, I called up a media expert, Professor L.S. Kim from UC Santa Cruz, to help explain why these stereotypes exist.
Quiet, docile, fragile, subservient. I mean, I'm curious, where did you come up with those words?
I don't know, it seemed like a good adjective on how they would, on how some movies would portray us.
Right, and think about it. I mean, you can ask yourself, like, why do you already know that that's how Asian American women are represented? It's because it's so prevalent. It's because it's such a powerful pattern. It's because it's been around for 100 years and has hardly changed.
Professor L.S. Kim told me that the first movie to show these Asian stereotypes was a 1922 movie called Toll of the Sea, featuring Anna May Wong. In short, it's about an Asian woman who falls in love with a white American man. They get married, have a kid, only to find out that he has another wife, who is white. And in the end, spoiler alert, she's heartbroken and takes her own life.
You know, that's not a very heroic or happy ending for the Asian female. That, again, it's about a certain powerlessness.
And these depictions of women who look like me as weak and self-sacrificing are no accident. Professor L.S. Kim explains how this came to be.
As our country and culture got more diverse, stereotypes are ways to maintain a certain social order, right? A certain social order in which some people maintain their status as privileged, and other people are kept, quote-unquote, in their place.
Meaning these stereotypes have real-life consequences. I walk down the street and people assume that they already know who I am because of these Hollywood stereotypes.
There isn't the same kind of freedom to express oneself, to represent oneself, and to be oneself.
I want to be able to see adventurous, risk-taking, sassy, strong, powerful Asian woman on the big screen. And if I want to see this happen, L.S. Kim says,
it takes a person in a position of power to hire an Asian American woman in a different kind of role. We need more characters and stories written and created. It has been so hard to get away from that stereotype created by non-Asians in the first place.
I realized that if I want to change media, I have to be a part of the change. In the future, I wish to pursue a career in film to prove that we aren't just some Hollywood stereotype. Now, I just have to break the news to my family.
So what do you think of me pursuing a career in media?
As long as you're happy, I was just hoping that you be the best at what you do, and I fully support your decision.
When you grow up, it's okay, but not now.
If you want it, you should go ahead and do it. Like, doesn't matter that it's not the traditional, like, doctor, lawyer. You do it enough and something you love, I'm pretty sure you're going to be successful in it.
With their support, it's finally time to direct that video game-inspired movie I've been planning with my friends. In San Francisco, I'm Ashley Nguyen for Cross Currents.
All the stories you heard today were reported by the students of Galileo Academy of Science and Technology of San Francisco in 2018 as part of our summer audio training program. Tune into Cross Currents Monday morning at 11. We often hear about teacher shortages and challenges, but there's another key figure in schools, the principal.
A good principal is a good buffer. So they buffer a lot of the messiness and the nitty-gritty so that a teacher's job is a lot easier.
A day in the life of a San Francisco principal. That's Monday morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Steffi Puerto, Cheryl Kaskowitz, James Rollins, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tenz, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.